now.
Welcome back in, everybody. Happy Friday. You guys are close to the weekend, and I'm getting there. But I'm glad I am here. You're listening to Steen on Sports, bringing sports your way every day, right here on 1700 The Champ, Real Sports Talk for real sports fans. You can check us out on Twitter at 1700 The Champ, at Steen on Sports. Facebook is at 1700 The Champ as well. Want to take this time really quick to thank my three sponsors, Laser Home Services, Northwest Bank, and BetMGM. We'll talk more about them when we get deeper into the show. Pretty excited. Want to get right to it. I have my next guest. He is at KOHare55 on Twitter. His name is Kevin O'Hare. He is a longtime contributor to this program, and I'm so glad to be talking to him. Happy Friday, buddy.
Happy Friday to you, my man. The sun is out. It's only 20 degrees, but the sun's out.
It is. Getting ready for a basketball game against Urbandale. You guys had a nice win earlier in the season.
Yeah.
That'll be exciting to see. What's expectations? How has Urbandale, I was kind of looking, but how's Urbandale been in since the last time you played?
They're good. I mean, they have kind of a deceiving record as well. I think it's a coin toss game. Very tight game that was at our place that we pulled out, but they've got a really good starting five and a guy or two off the bench that are really good. They shoot the heck out of it, and so it should be a really good game.
I wanted to ask you, and I told you I had something I wanted to talk to you about, and this has been I have my opinion, and I definitely wanted to get yours. This has been talked about with the Iowa Hawkeyes and Coach McCaffrey. His kind of set rule that if one of his players gets two fouls in the first half, that he is setting them because he wants those three fouls for the second half. In your coaching philosophy, I know it's a little different in high school because you have quarters, same kind of thing though. What is your coaching philosophy, and what do you think of that coaching philosophy?
So I hate it.
I mean,
a lot of it's just dictated by the game and things along those lines. If I, again, in situation stuff, and if I have a guy who, he comes out of the game or he gets two fouls in the first 2 or 3 minutes, we'll probably pull him for sure. Sit him for a couple minutes, see how the game's going. You know, is he one of our top 2 or 3 players? Is he just a rebounder, bruiser guy? Can we save him on the bench and get some minutes and keep the lead or score where it is? I mean, all that comes into play. And, you know, is the other team making a run on us while our guy with two fouls is on the bench? Well, then we're going to put him back in and, you know, let him play and play smart and let him know the situation and stuff like that. You know, do they pick up two fouls with 2 minutes left in the second quarter? Then probably you sit him for two minutes because it's not worth it. But super situational, but I for sure will let guys play with three fouls in the first half, depending on what's going on.
Yeah, and I guess, so this was kind of my same point. Number one, after it happened once, I would have a talk with Keegan and say, listen, we're not going to win a basketball game by tight defense or over-aggressive defense in the first 10 minutes of the game. We need to, I think everybody needs to take a step back and see what kind of calls are going to be made. And I have refereed before. I have kept score. None of those jobs are easy. You're going to get blamed for everything anyway. But refereeing crews are so different that, you know, unless you're constantly getting the same one, you have no way of telling what they're going to call or what they're not going to call. But after he gets two, if you sit down with him and just say, okay, listen, we're going to change the defensive philosophy a little bit, maybe. Or, you know, on offense, let's don't be over aggressive on offense. Let things come to you so you don't pick up one on the offensive end. I mean, I think there's other things to do that you can do instead of just making him sit for the whole half.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you in Iowa, they go in and out of zones. You can zone to save a foul. You can put them on the worst scoring offensive threat in the game. I just think coaches that have it in their mind that they're going to, no matter what, they're sitting them. It's unreal to me. Just like, hey, at the 4-minute mark, we're going to go with these guys with the sub. well, what if the guy that they're subbing for just hit two threes? I mean, I've literally put guys in or sent them to the scorer's table to get a guy, and then that guy hits a three. I'll bring that guy back.
Absolutely.
I mean, let's just ride it. Let's see what happens.
And that's always been mine, too. And I also don't I'm not in favor of sometimes, and I don't want to keep picking on Iowa. I mean, I know you know what Jordy Bohannon can get you in a game. Now, you may have games that he can get you more than that. You may have games that he's going to give you less. If the reason you're starting him is because he's a fifth or sixth year senior, I don't understand that. And I don't dislike Jordy Bohannon. I just think that there's better people to be in there to try to, when you're having what they're having and that's getting off to horrible starts, you need to do something different.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Again, I think he's more of a, this point in his career, he's a not a spot minute guy, but he's certain situations, run certain sets, things along those lines. I mean, yeah, as a 23, 24-year-old, he's probably going on 34 body-wise. And so it's just a lot tougher, and I couldn't agree more with that.
I couldn't wait. I have a stat for you, but I wanted to ask you, I got to make sure I can find my stat here. There it is. It's right there. I wanted to ask you on Iowa State, and you've had this happen before, that you have a freshman team that has a lot of athletes and can play defense, but sometimes they don't have that ability to score on a regular basis. What Iowa State's going through, I think people are starting to get a little frustrated, but I don't think they understand that when you look at that Iowa State team, you have, except for Hunter, who's a really good point guard, and I think you can allow that, and Brockington gets you points, but they don't have anybody that TJ can go out on the floor and say, okay, we need a point here, so we're going to run this play for him. I think Iowa, before they figured out how good Keegan Murray was, I think that's what we all were looking at, is who's their guy too. When you have a game and you're playing Kansas, and people's comments to me were, well, Kansas had a couple of really good players that were out and we still didn't perform as well. And I'm like, they still have players. I mean, you look at our roster and it matches TJ. But there's no five stars or four stars on there that you still have on your bench that are replacing guys. That's a big task to beat somebody like Kansas when you don't have a dude that can get you 20 points all the time.
Yeah, and that's going to take, you know, a year or two or whatever for him to even get some more, you know, quality players in. That said, they've got them. You know, they've got plenty of guys there. But, you know, having that, you know, Abachi or however you say his last name from Kansas or some of these schools that have that go-to guy, that's great and all. But I also think as a team, you can defensively, you know, try to take that guy out. Where on the flip side of it, Iowa State not having that guy per se, whether it be Brockington, but not having that guy, that also allows them to get a bucket from just about anybody that's in that starting lineup, so they become tougher to defend just because you don't know where it's going to come from, late game situation or things along those lines. So it's kind of a twofold thing where it'd be nice to have that Michael Jordan go get you a bucket, but at the same time, teams can't just take this guy away because, okay, this guy could hit a shot. They're just not doing it right now.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And I think the other thing sometimes is that you are, you know, you're looking at Iowa State and how much they have to fight for all these wins they're getting. And there comes a day during the season, Kevin, you just don't have that. You don't have that ability to take that one more gear. It's just not there.
Right, right. And again, they're going through, right? It's February. It's dog days. It's the Big 12 conference. It's, I mean, the worst team in the Big 12 is, you know, like a Missouri right now or whoever. And again, that's not like the worst team of all. I mean, the Big 12 is just so tough. So as I say that, it's just to tell you how tough that schedule is. And again, I don't think we really knew what we had or this team had on paper coming into the year. And, you know, they obviously got everybody excited early on. they've hit a little bit, stubbed their toe from time to time here and there just because of the schedule and other teams just having better players and things along those lines. But I still think Iowa State can be a tough out anywhere. You lack consistency. Yeah. And that just has to do with not having the players there for a certain amount of years or things, or having some senior leadership or things along those lines. But I don't think they're too far away.
I saw this once again. We're talking to Kevin O'Hare. He's at KOHare 55. I was looking at these two box scores, and I thought of you the other day, too. Drake with a big win, and you and I beat Bradley. Drake's scoring leaders for that game: Murphy had 15, DeVries had 14, Wilkins had 15, Sturts had 15, Penn had 14, Hemphill had 8. If you can continuously do that, explain to the audience how hard that is when you have 6 people that can score like that on your basketball team.
So hard to defend. You know, I was looking through high school stats today just to kind of get ready as we get into sub-state here in a couple weeks. And, you know, some teams have 2 guys with 15 and 13, and then the next guy's 5. And I would rather, you know, give me 12, 9, 8, 7, and 6, and 5 all day, just because you become – that much tougher to guard. And, you know, you can take away one guy, but you can't take away 2, 3, and 4. And yeah, Drake's got so many weapons there. And they've got a guy or two that can go get 20 or 25, but they have so many guys that can go get 12. And I think that's just so hard to guard.
And you and I had Noah Carter had 19, AJ Green had 18, Burhau had 19, and Bowen Bourne had 15. I just looked at both of those and go, oh man, I can't wait to talk to coach about what it's like to have that on your team. And like you said, there are guys that can get more than that, but to have that spread like that is pretty amazing. When I look at stats for boys basketball, Ames still number 1, Pleasant Valley number 2. This was a surprise to me, but you're going to tell me that it probably wasn't to you. I thought Centennial might be a little bit better than they are, and I didn't think Ankeny was going to be as good as they are. What's your take on Ankeny?
So I don't necessarily disagree with what you're saying. I thought Centennial would be a little better. I thought Ankeny would be what they are. You know, Ankeny's got – they got, you know, an Aguirre brother that, you know, transferred in. They're big. They're bruisers. They have one or two, like, quality basketball players. And then they have 4 or 5 just guys. And those guys, you know, they played football, big bodies. They're physical. They're tough. You know, Coach Carlson there does a fantastic job. So I kind of – and they lost a guy to Indianola, Braden Dre, who's a stud. But I kind of thought Ankeny would be where they are. I thought Ankeny Centennial might, you know, be 2 games better, give or take. But, again, that's the IML conference too. That's tough. And – Coach Montana does a great job. I mean, they'll be clicking here when they need to be.
Surprise Valley at 13-3.
Surprise Valley's 13-3 with Reardon going out. I think maybe they've lost 1 game since he's been gone, and you know they might be 5-1 or 6-0 without him. And I think that says a lot to Coach Windhorst. And then Ruitt over there has started to step up. Stinson's got a freshman son over there starting guard. He's a stud. And then other quality players that are starting to fill in. And again, now they become a little bit more hard to guard and not so one- or two-dimensional with just Ruitt and Eli. And so now you got to focus on other guys. And so BJ's done a really good job since Eli's gone down.
How does Ruitt fit in college?
I think really well. You know, 6'9", steps out, shoots it. You know, you can critique a lot of things. Got to get bigger and stronger. Got to get a little quicker. He's a Division I player for sure, mid-major or high major. I don't think he's a low major D1. I think he's mid-major for sure. You can always redshirt him. You can get 5 years out of him that way. But he shoots the ball so well for 6'9", handles it pretty well, you know, rebounds, block shots, and just a high character, great kid.
More surprised that Johnston is 13-3 or Waukee Northwest is 12-4.
Ooh, good. Good question. So I was probably not surprised with either, but I'm probably more surprised Northwest. just because they broke schools and you don't necessarily know what you're going to have. Combining some guys, Johnston played in the finals last year. They have their two studs back in Kramer and Lewis, surrounded by a lot of other guys, coached really well by Coach Frick and Coach Woodley and some other guys over there. And then Price Sanford obviously speaks for himself. And they got shooters everywhere on the floor for Northwest, and Coach Watson does a really good job with them.
We got about another minute. Quick one. Trey Lewis or his sister, if you had to pick one to be on your team?
Well, so I'm going to take Trey Lewis, and that's probably going to hurt a lot of people, but I haven't seen Trey's enough of Jenica.
Trey's really good, though. I'm just teasing Trey. Trey. So.
Yeah, Trey's really good. I haven't seen enough of Jenica. Obviously, Twitter speaks for itself about her. She's going to flat out be amazing, but I'll take Trey.
All right. This so far for the season, Caitlin's averaging 26.5, 8.4, 8.1, 4.5 turnovers. I mean, if you're gonna yell at something, I guess you could yell at that. 45.5% field goal percentage and 89.8 of shooting free throws. Field goal, she gets stuck with the ball a lot with not very much time left sometimes. So field goal percentage can be in and out, but the rest of that, what's your take?
Yeah, if you're going to critique anything, it's the turnovers, right? She probably tries to do a little too much, so much for sophomore slumps as they talk about. I mean, what she's doing right now is now with, like, a super serious scouting report on her. Like, there's no – you're just going to surprise people after your first year. Like, they're going to throw two people, three people. She's still doing it. It's unbelievable what she's doing.
Five triple-doubles. It's unreal and so much fun to watch. Good luck tonight, and have a great day, and I can't wait to talk to you next week, buddy.
Thank you very much. Have a good weekend.
You too. Coach Kevin O'Hare, you're listening to Steen on Sports on 1700 The Champ, Real Sports Talk for real sports fans. I'll be back. Tim Murray coming in from VEASAN next.
Here's a look at traffic on what
caregiving brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Nothing's off limits. Join the conversation now on Twitter at Steen on Sports. 1700 The Champ, Real Sports Talk for real sports fans.
Welcome back in, everybody. Happy Friday. Hope you all had a great day. We're heading for the weekend. You're listening to Steen on Sports, bringing sports your way every day right here on 1700 The Champ, Real Sports Talk for real sports fans. My next guest is going to be brought to you by Laser Home Services. If you need anything done on your heating, cooling, plumbing, or electrical, give Laser Home Services a call, 515-654-5249. Great customer service, great products, great service, guys. They're going to come out. They're going to tell you what's wrong. They're going to give you an upfront price that it's going to cost to fix. That's all you're going to pay. That's all you can ask for. It's amazing. They keep everything on schedule. They're going to send you all kinds of alerts that they're coming or when they're coming and all of that. It's a great business, providing home services to Des Moines for the last 20 years. Once again, give them a call, 515-654-5249. My next guest is Mr. Tim Murray. He is at One Tim Murray with VEASAN Network. Tim, how you doing, buddy?
I'm great, Steen. It's an exciting weekend here in Las Vegas. A lot is going on.
It is crazy how much is going on, and like Vegas needs, you know, added, you know, a bunch of football, NFL football players, and everything else going on. I wanted to ask you one betting item before 23 days in. And New York City does sports betting. It was like $1.68 billion in sports betting. That's a crazy number, Tim.
Yeah, it is. It's astonishing to see the amount of money that they have already brought in. And I'm trying to pull up the stat. They have set the all-time U.S. state handle mark. And that was just in the month of January. The previous record was held by Jersey in October of 2021. So in 23 days, $1.6 billion wagered in New York. Not surprising, but yeah, it's kind of, here we go. I mean, you know, the biggest city in the United States has got legalized gambling and a whole host of operators there. I just saw another one, WynnBET, just started today in New York. So you've got, I think, five or six operators there in the state of New York. It is it's game on there.
Wow, that is amazing. I want to get to the Pro Bowl and the Super Bowl, but I have to ask you first. Were you more excited about Dave Ziegler coming to the Las Vegas Raiders or Josh McDaniel, or you'll take the pair just the same?
You know, I was, I'll be honest, I'm not a Raider fan, but I thought, you know, it made a whole lot of sense. I thought Jim Harbaugh would be the guy who landed here. And I was secretly kind of hoping that it would come true because my partner, Sean King, we do a segment on Tuesdays. We call it Overreaction Tuesday, where we just say something that has a very small chance of coming true. But we do believe it kind of deep down inside that there's an outside chance it could happen. And when he said it, you know, I kind of looked at him and said, I don't think so. But, you know, the steam was going that way. You know, we had the Bruce Feldman report that he would take the job if the Raiders came calling. I just had my questions about Josh McDaniels. Maybe that's unfair. But he was, you know, he was a failure in Denver. He went back to New England, learned more. He said he's changed his ways. I mean, my curiosity is about Derek Carr. By all accounts, a great leader, not a great quarterback, a solid quarterback, not a great quarterback. He's only making about $19 million next year. So he's not going to play on that deal. And I know Josh McDaniels came in and said, we've talked, you know, he's a great quarterback. He's a leader. He said all the right things. But I think the thing that makes the most sense for the organization is probably to move on. I mean, it wouldn't make sense, in my opinion, to pay him $35, $40 million a year, which is kind of the going rate for a top 10 quarterback. I don't think Derek Carr is a top 10 quarterback. And I think the next couple of months are going to be really interesting to see what the the Raiders decide to do with Derek Carr. So, I think it's a fine hire, I just think back, and sorry to be long-winded, but I just think back to some college basketball hiring where we think, oh, my God, this couldn't go wrong. I mean, Chris Mack at Louisville. Oh. I mean, the guy was phenomenal at Xavier and, you know, gave his alma mater a number one seed as the all-time winningest coach there at Xavier, goes to Louisville, place with the winning tradition and resources, and he gets fired this year. Archie Miller, I mean, everyone thought he would be a home run at Indiana, gets fired at Indiana. So you just never know. I think more and more we do this where we're like, oh, that's a great hire. I just don't know because at the end of the day, I know there's a rapport between the new GM and head coach, but you just never know in this crazy industry.
And that's the crazy thing, too, because I thought the same thing about Archie Miller. And then when they hired Mike Woodson, I'm like, oh, my gosh, they're settling. But it's the exact opposite on Mike Woodson as well. They're playing really well. He has them back. You know, the people are talking about Indiana basketball. It's crazy how that stuff works. Aaron Rodgers. We have to talk about him. And I've been so curious how he doesn't stay in Green Bay. Well, I think I know the reason he probably isn't staying in Green Bay, because they can't afford both him and Davante Adams. So, you know, how good is Aaron Rodgers without Davante Adams? Or how good is Davante Adams without Aaron Rodgers? Well, somebody's going to find out. But, you know, with him not speaking hardly ever, it has the whole football world's up in arms, because they don't know where this one piece is going. And then all these other pieces start falling in.
Yeah, I mean, he's, as we kind of learned over the past year or so, he's kind of you know, marches to the beat of his own drum. I do work in Milwaukee every morning up there, and you know, we've been talking about Aaron Rodgers at nonstop, obviously last summer, and he comes back and he wins, going to win MVP. I think you think back at some of the failures in the postseason for Aaron Rodgers, and I can point to regions, you know, whether it be, you know, a defensive gaffe or this most recent one, special teams. I think this most recent loss, you could absolutely put at the feet of Aaron Rodgers. I think it was a massive letdown. He could have done a lot of things. The interception or the throw down the field into double coverage of Davante Adams when he's got, I think it was Lazard across the middle. I'm not knocking it. I'm not knocking Aaron Rodgers. Look, any organization should really do whatever they can do to get him. I mean, not any, but most of them. So I think at the end of the day, I think he's gone. I don't know where. That's my gut. I think he leaves. And I think I don't know if he wants something new. I know there's these Titans rumors out there because he's bought land and outside of Nashville. I just don't know. I don't know where he'll ultimately land. But I tell you what, if I were Tennessee and the opportunity to get Aaron Rodgers, I would sell the earth, moon, and sun to get him. I would, because look at the Rams right now. Who knows what the future is going to hold for the Rams? They went all in. They've traded draft picks, and they're in the Super Bowl. And if you win the Super Bowl, at the end of the day, nothing else matters. You won the Super Bowl. In my opinion, you look at that Tennessee team, elite defense, superstar running back. A.J. Brown is what he is. If you could trade a couple pieces for Aaron Rodgers and bring him down, I don't know the cap situation. I'm just speculating. I would do that in a second. If I could get 2 years of Aaron Rodgers with that defense, we could figure it out cap-wise. I mean, you were the number one seed in the AFC this past year. Now you're going into the AFC, which is loaded with quarterbacks. I totally recognize that. Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, Patrick Mahomes. I mean, the list is very fruitful.
Please, Lamar Jackson. Please, for my
Lamar
Baltimore
Jackson
Raven.
In Baltimore, you know. So, you know, it makes a lot of, you know, it would be a task. But with that defense, I mean, look, Ryan Tannehill in that Cincinnati game, I thought was just absolutely abysmal. I mean, three interceptions, the read option on third and one where he, you know, decided to keep it himself instead of giving it to Derrick Henry. You know, you're simplifying things when you say it's all on the quarterback. It's not all on the quarterback, but when the defense plays that well, holds Joe Burrow and that offense out of the end zone all but once, holds them to five field goals, this game you got to win at home. And if you brought in Aaron Rodgers, it would be a whole different ball game there at Tennessee.
Once again, we're talking to Tim Murray. He's at One Tim Murray on Twitter. What's bigger in Vegas, the Super Bowl, watch people coming to watch the Super Bowl, or people coming to watch the NCAA tournament?
March Madness.
I think. We've been there once. It was awesome.
Yeah, that first weekend of March Madness is something to be seen. And, you know, I was out here last year. Mid-March, things were getting a little better, obviously, with the pandemic. But I think this year, crowds are gonna be huge. I'm trying to remember. I think we were back to 100% capacity for the NCAA tournament. I can't recall. But obviously, we are now here in Las Vegas. And here's a little – so to answer your question, the bigger weekend is March Madness. That first weekend of March Madness is crazy. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday is nuts. But here's a little thing that I would throw to people's way. If you're a huge college basketball fan, this is what I would do if I were visiting. I would not visit that weekend. I would visit personally because I like going to games. I would visit conference championship weekend. Here in Las Vegas, folks, we have the West Coast Conference, which is a potential four-bid league, which is Gonzaga, BYU, San Francisco, and St. Mary's. They play at the Orleans. That's early in the week. Okay, you get there early in the week, catch the championship on Tuesday, maybe the semifinals on Monday. Don't say you have to go to games every night. Then, towards the back half of the week, scene. First off, by the way, you have games going on at all hours of the day because conference tournaments are going on everywhere, right? You can sit in the sports book and watch conference basketball for 15 hours. Then, you've got the Mountain West tournament. Mountain West, by the way, for those who aren't up to date on the Mountain West this year, could have four tournament teams. Wyoming, Colorado State, Boise State, San Diego State. They play at Thomas and Mack where UNLV plays. Then at the brand spanking new Dollar Loan Center, just like 10 minutes from my house in Henderson, Nevada, you've got the Big West Conference tournament going on, which is a bit of a down conference this year. You've also got the Pac-12 tournament going on. If anyone stayed up late last night to watch Arizona and UCLA, those are potentially two number one seeds in the NCAA tournament. So it is a phenomenal week. There's so many games to bet on. You can watch the ACC, the Big East, the SEC, all of them in sports books, and you can also go to college basketball games too. So that's always my tip to people is, look, that first weekend is something you have to do at some point. But in my opinion, the better week to come to Vegas is the week prior with the conference tournaments.
That is so cool. Pay attention to that. That is awesome. All right. So let's get into that. We got a couple of minutes left. Cincinnati, and the Rams. It's going to be exciting. I'm trying to figure out how many Bengal fans are going to try to get into that stadium. I feel bad for LA right now because they really, I mean, last week I don't know who the home team was. I know who the home stadium was, but what's your first take on that game coming up?
Well, my first thought was that I feel like it'll be a lower scoring game. The way the Rams just played their style against the 49ers. Now, remember, there was obviously familiarity between the 49ers and the Rams being it the third time they played. So that's why that game skewed lower scoring. But the market has kind of reacted to that. It opened a total of around 50, 51, and then has dropped now, settled in around 50, 48 and a half. I think you might see an uptick here shortly as we get closer to the Super Bowl. People want to bet overs in the Super Bowl. You know, it's hard to bet against Joe Burrow right now. That's kind of the narrative that's being thrown around, and I totally understand that, right? They're underdog at Tennessee. They went outright underdog at Kansas City, obviously, and come back to win from 18 down and obviously win that game in overtime. But I think it's a bad matchup for Cincinnati. You know, I thought Tennessee was a bad matchup for Cincinnati, and it was, except Ryan Tannehill existed. Matthew Stafford is not Ryan Tannehill.
No, and they beat Joe Burrow up too. Man, did they beat him up.
Cooper Kupp and Odell playing like, you know, vintage Odell. Curious to see the status of Tyler Higbee. Hopefully he's able to go for the Rams. There's a reason this number has gravitated north. It started at 3.5. It's now up to 4.5. Even though my hunch is, Steen, come game time, I think there will be more Bengals money than Rams money. That's just my guess, but I feel like what people like to do, especially the Super Bowl being the most recreationally bet event all year, and especially with the, you know, sports gambling being legalized. I mean, I'm sure a lot of your listeners there in Iowa, right? If you can get to a book, you get the Circus Sports or wherever, you know, you're going to go to the counter or on your app or whatever it is, and you're going to say, I don't know. And then you're going to look at plus 175 on the Bengals, and you're going to say, wait, so if I, you know, if I throw down $40, I'm going to get, you know, $70 back. Well, that seems like a great bet. I think ultimately what's going to happen is you're going to see a bit of a suppressed money line, and I'm going to end up betting the Rams. I haven't bet them yet. I'm going to wait. I think this money line is going to start coming down a little bit, because I think a lot of bettors are going to be firing away. You know, $40. If right now at the money line of the Bengals, you put on $40 at plus 175, you're making 70. I think that's going to intrigue a lot of people. What have you seen lately, Steen? You've seen the Bengals go into Kansas City and win, go into Tennessee and win, and now, to your point, there might be more Bengals fans in LA than there are Rams fans come next Sunday.
You bet. Tim, as always, thank you. Your knowledge is so much fun to listen to. My audience loves it. Appreciate it. Talk to you again before the Super Bowl, buddy.
Good.
So good. You're listening to Steen on Sports, bringing sports your way every day right here on 1700 The Champ. Real sports talk for real sports fans.
From Mount Pleasant to Fort Dodge. Sports talk for real sports fans.
Welcome back in, everybody. Happy Friday. You're listening to Steen on Sports, bringing sports your way every day right here on 1700 The Champ, real sports talk for real sports fans. Check us out on Twitter at Steen on Sports, at 1700 The Champ. Facebook is at 1700 The Champ. The website, 1700thechamp.com. I have all the podcasts up. You can go to Audioboom, or you can go anywhere that you get your podcasts. I just have yesterday, because it hadn't jumped up on the system yet, and I'll have today's as well, and we'll start fresh on Monday and make sure I get those done daily. My fault. My apology. Oh, what else do I have? We have, first off, come on. Seriously, Kevin O'Hare. so much fun to talk to. Those segments go so fast when there are just so many things that I want to talk about. And you follow that up with Tim Murray. I mean, what more can you ask for? And that's not even getting, you know, there's still another week. So I'm hoping I can get Tim Murray in next week so we can go through some Super Bowl stuff. But I agree with him. I have been out. It's been a while, but a group of four of us went out, husbands and wives, to Vegas for the first weekend, and it was amazing. It was so much fun. I would love to, but he's given you some really good information. Championship week is pretty cool, too, especially if you go back on Monday, because you'll get to see the NCAA. You get to see the selection show as well. So, I mean, that's an added benefit there on Sunday, too. And now since things are a lot different. I mean, it was long. It might even have been before, I don't know. I'll have to, my wife might pop in here and tell me what the date was. But just to get to see all those games, that's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday games, just about every hour. And in a sports book, that'd be so cool. Don't forget, I have David Eicholt coming up, and then I have B Styles coming up. So I had the two third segments of each hour today. So let's go through these pretty quick. I've got some things I want to talk about, but, we're going to do Northwest Bank, two locations in Ankeny, one in West Des Moines. It's a great bank with great product. Scott and I talked a lot about this yesterday. What they're going to do is they're going to make banking easy for you. Now, that depends on what you think is making banking easy. If that means you want to go in and you want people to help you and you want to, you know, you're old school and you want to do all that, they're going to do that. If you're new school and you barely ever come to the bank, just know they're ready to take care of you too. They're going to make it easier than what you currently are doing. That's how good they are and how much they can cover all of that. And I think that's one of the things that I have the most respect for them is they can handle it any way you want. All they want to do is just make it so you don't have to think about it all the time. You're not worried about things. That's their job. That's what they're going to do for you. I love that part about them. Northwest Bank, member FDIC. Okay. Oh, I don't even know where I want to go. Let's start with Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball had requested an immediate assistance of a federal mediator to help resolve the lockout. The players, I think after the last time the owners came back, the players said they weren't even going to vote on it. So the ownership thought, okay, we'll take this time to see if we can get them to move past that and go into and have a mediator come. The Players Association turned that down today, too. So you're going to hear all kinds of things come out this week, and the owners are going to say, you know, they're not operating in good faith. The players are going to say they haven't changed anything. They haven't talked about anything. All they want to do is settle to get us in so they can start playing and start making money. And I don't think it's going to work that way this time. I don't know that because it always – the paychecks are different, folks. The paychecks are different between owners and players. And owners still have money. They just don't have as much money and they want more money. And that's kind of the issue because the players want more money too. And you're both not going to win what you want. So that is a big deal. I actually did say this yesterday. Before I heard the news, maybe it was the day before, that I think the Jacksonville Jaguars had done a wrong to Byron Leftwich to not even. I think Byron Leftwich was very upfront with them that he really wants to get back with the Jacksonville Jaguars, but he's not happy about Trent Baalke. And neither was a whole bunch of other people that have interviewed for the job. And that would have been Byron's second interview as well. And sometimes people say, well, why should a coach have a say over that? Well, if you look as a coach and you're going to Jacksonville, Trent Baalke has fired four coaches since he's been there. So your livelihood of your job isn't very good when you go to Jacksonville if he's not willing to work with you to try to get the Jacksonville Jaguars back to where they used to be. I think I would have an issue with that too. The difference between Byron Leftwich and Doug Peterson, the biggest difference between the two of them is Doug Peterson doesn't have a job right now, and he wants to get back into football because he doesn't think that he did not leave Philadelphia quietly. He wanted to stay. He wanted to keep fighting, and they didn't want that. I don't know that you can say that that's worked out well for the Philadelphia Eagles, but it could in the long run. We just don't know yet. I think Doug Peterson is a great hire. I'm not even saying that Doug Peterson isn't a great hire over Byron Leftwich. Byron Leftwich had ties. Sometimes that means something. Sometimes it doesn't, and I understand that. But I don't think that anybody, and I don't think you're going to get free agents. I don't think he negotiates well. I think he tries to underpay. There's just some issues. And when you have the owner going, well, that's what he's supposed to be doing. You know, you're an owner of a team. If you want your fans to back this team, they don't care about if you lose a couple million dollars here and there. You're a billionaire. The people don't care. But they're not going to come. They're not going to come watch your product if you don't put a good product on the field. And you can't keep firing coaches. People, it's a coaching community. They're going to stop going there. You're always going to be able to get somebody less to go there because they need a job to figure it out. You know, to see if they can do this. Doug Peterson is a proven winner. If my initial. When we have B Styles on today, B Styles knows my initial thing is if I'm hiring somebody to take Trevor Lawrence under his wing, I thought Doug Peterson would be a home run. And now if he can be a home run with Trent Baalke there, it's a win-win. So we'll see what happens. I thought it was getting back to yesterday, we talked a lot about girls and women in sports. Today on the Herd with Colin Cowherd, Joy Taylor and Alex Curry did the show today. Colin wasn't there. That's just one in another that you had two female hosts if it's not the top sports radio show, it's in the top five of sports radio shows in the country. And I think that is a big deal. This is one that has me on the edge of my seat is trying to figure out what Eric DaCosta, the general manager, general partner, I don't know exactly what his title, that's what he does, and Lamar Jackson are trying to sit down and get a contract. His contract is up in 2022. After last season with everything involved, there is nobody in football that's going to tell you that Lamar Jackson's not a top five player in the NFL. But even if you are a top five player in the NFL and the team that you're playing for doesn't use you in a way that behooves you, I don't know what that does. I'm leery of what's happening in my beloved Baltimore Raven land. I like the fact that they changed the defense up. I thought the defense was a bigger problem this year. We'd play really good until people could, you know, go three quarters and then they'd scheme their way through and figure out what they need to do. And we had nothing left for that fourth quarter. This is the bad one. I don't have very long to talk about. I got like 30 seconds. The Washington football team, Daniel Snyder's in a lawsuit with women who have been sexually harassed. It's a horrific story. What has come out in the last 24 hours is that the NFL and Daniel Snyder had an agreement that even after all of this is done, that nothing that has gone on through this is going to be made public. And I don't think any of the women, the witnesses, knew that. And for the federal government to come in and listen to things like that, but know that there's something there between the NFL, and I'll talk more about it in the last segment, It's a bad look for the NFL. It's a horrible look for the NFL. It's a horrible look for Daniel Snyder, but we already knew that. But the NFL, I don't know if they recover as well as they think they're going to. You're listening to Steen on Sports, bringing sports your way every day. David Eicholt, Iowa Hawkeyes, coming up next.
Here's a look at traffic on 101.3 and 1700.